Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
Citing his inability to be consistent or really intellectually honest, Governor Jay Inslee is prepping legislation to permanently ban flavored vaping products in the state of Washington. He already passed it through the sort of the health process semi-permanently. We say semi-permanently because I have no idea when it's not going to be in effect. It's supposed to only be temporary, but they have a tendency to stay around for a very long time. But he wants to make it permanent. Seattle Times has a report in. They say Inslee's proposal would put a cap on nicotine levels in non-THC vaping products. It would eliminate bulk sales, and it would give broader authority to the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board and State Health Secretary to issue bans or seize illegal products. Now, that last part I have no problem with, the seizing illegal products. It should be very easy to be able to seize illegal products, especially because the deaths, the issues that people have had health-wise with all of these stories popping up across the country, including here in Washington State, has to do with illegal products. Just throwing that out there. I don't want the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board nor the State Health Secretary to have an easier time issuing bans on anything. I'm sorry, bans? That should be the last thing we do. That should be the last-ditch effort to go after a serious problem. We are not there yet. Unless you're Governor Jay Inslee. He seems to think we're there. This is going to put people out of business. It will flatly put people out of business. But Jay Inslee says he cares about business. Democrats say they deeply care about small businesses, especially. They don't. This is not the business category that they care about. Democrats pretend to care about business. They don't really care about businesses. They care about them only as much as they can take tax dollars from their bottom line. They don't appreciate what businesses do. They appreciate the money that they give to the federal government and the local and state governments. But this move undoubtedly is going to put people out of business. Here's a question I have. Why not ban flavored vodkas? I've asked that question before. No one seems to be able to answer that, including the interview we did with the council member from Mill Creek. Good guy who wants to ban vaping products there. Very good guy. But he didn't really have an answer on that. Why not prosecute people selling to minors? Why not up that a little bit? I haven't really heard an answer on that. Have you guys? How are these kids getting a hold of the vaping products? They can't purchase them. So they're either buying them illegally or someone is selling to them illegally. They're purchasing black market products. How about going after that problem? Why not go undercover? Go after the black market devices. Go after the people that are putting them out there selling them. Because that's where the health issues are originating from. Why not do that? And how about this? This is kind of crazy. Why not just ban cigarettes?
Nope.
I'm told cigarettes are bad for you. The data backs that up. Why not ban cigarettes? Oh, because you're addicted to the blood money that you're getting from it? Okay. Well, if that's the case, why not collect blood money from the jewels? I know you want to pretend that having a mango-flavored cartridge of nicotine is the reason why all of these kids are vaping all of a sudden. Do you really believe that? And if you do, again, just show me some consistency or at least explain why you're not going after alcohol. Oh, well, kids aren't drinking as much anymore. Well, how about this? One kid drinking underage is one kid too many. Because that's the line you guys like to throw out there all the time. Show me some consistency, or at least be honest as to why you're doing what it is you're doing. That's all. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So the jobs report that just came out for the month of November is absolutely insane. 266,000 new jobs have been created. They thought they were only going to get 187. By only, I mean, that's still a huge number. But they ended up getting 266,000. That pushes the unemployment rate down to 3.5%, the lowest we've ever seen since 1969. 50-year low. And it's all happening under Donald Trump. And it's all happening as a direct result of the Republican tax cut that Democrats warned us over and over and over again would kill this economy. Man, a recession is coming. But instead of recession, what do we get, Jim Cramer?
These are 50 years, okay? Now, I'm 64. I didn't know about things were in 13, when I was 13 and 14, other than the war. But these are, I'm not going to say it. You can't contradict that these are the best numbers of our lives.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, we had guns and butter when we were doing these things 50 years ago. And that followed with inflation and recession. I don't see inflation. I don't see recession. 50 years ago, that number was a curse. Now it's a blessing. And you know something, Joe? It doesn't matter whether you hate them or like them. These are real numbers.
These are real numbers. And that is very deeply concerning to Democrats. That's why they're pushing impeachment so hard. They need to go after the president because they know he's going to get reelected unless he is removed from office. And the fact of the matter is, most people vote by looking at their own personal situation. And I know it's that cliche question, but it's asked every single election. Every single politician puts it out there, and they put it out there every single election because it's a true feeling. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago or 8 years ago? The answer for the vast majority of Americans is yes. And right now, 266,000 people are better off where they were just the month previous. The more these numbers trend in this direction, the better it is for President Trump, and he knows it.
Our regulatory reform efforts are delivering prosperity to forgotten men, women, and children of America. We are seeing a middle-class boom led by blue-collar jobs, and that's one of the things that's so great. The blue-collar workers, great workers of our country, they're really benefiting tremendously from what we've done with the tax cuts and all of the other things that we've done. And very big, I think, is the regulation cuts, because even before we were able to get the tax cuts so successfully from Congress, we started cutting regulations immediately, and that had a big impact. And that's why we went up so much between the election victory. So you'd say really from November 9th, the day after the election, up until January 20th, the inauguration, the stock markets and jobs literally went through the roof. And if the election were lost, it would have gone right through the floor. It would have been a disaster.
Who in their right mind, who is an independent sitting on the fence, would say, I mean, this whole getting a new job thing is good, but I'd really like socialized health care for illegal immigrants. I'd really prefer to be in a position where I don't get to pick my own health care insurance. I mean, yeah, I like the tax cuts that have benefited me, but you know what I really want? Gun confiscation and open borders. Who would do that? Who would say that? And yet we hear from people, Trump is not presidential. He's not good enough. He is not worthy of the office. That is what Michael Bloomberg is saying.
I looked at our national government getting worse, the way we're behaving overseas and domestically.
You mean demanding that we not have to foot the bill for absolutely everything going on aid-wise in different organizations that we're a part of, like NATO, different countries that we're helping to support like that?
Led by our president. I said back in 2016, he is the wrong person for the job. He doesn't have the temperament or the ethics, the intellect to do the job.
He doesn't have the intellect. Michael Bloomberg does, but not Donald Trump, the person who's in office right now at a time where we've seen economic prosperity unlike what we've seen in the last 50 years.
And I watched and I said, we just can't have another 4 years of this. And then I watched all the candidates and I just thought to myself, Donald Trump would eat him up.
That part's true. It's going to eat you up as well. Bloomberg has no shot at becoming president. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Let me know your thoughts on all this. Tell me, are you better off now than you were under Obama? 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, I am on a mission to be the number one most podcast show in this building. And I am very, very, very close. I'm very close because of folks like you who support this show. So if you have not yet become a podcast subscriber, I implore you, text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, or wherever it is you download and listen to your podcast, just search Jason Rantz Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It is Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies. Thanks to our sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. The weekend movie release we're going to talk about today is Adam Carolla's documentary. It's called No Safe Spaces. It takes a deep dive look into some of the crazy progressive antics on college campuses and the rise of fascism. Progressives essentially censoring conservative speech that they don't like because it might make them think.
This is a brainwash that they undergo. If you are conservative, then you are not wrong. You are evil. They have to think we're evil. Otherwise, they have to debate us.
The chaos centered around controversial conservative Ben Shapiro.
Values matter significantly more than melanin level. Racial diversity doesn't mean anything. Decency means something. Diversity is not a bad thing, but it isn't a good thing unless the people who are racially diverse are also decent.
Concerns over safety and threats prompted University President William Covino to cancel the pre-approved speech, but Shapiro continued with his scheduled appearance, drawing dozens of protesters who were desperate to stop him.
Look at me. I mean, like, do I look like a physical threat to anybody? Last time I was in a fight, I was 14 years old. I was 2 years younger than everybody else in my high school class, and I was getting my ass kicked.
When I went to college, suddenly there were some folks who didn't think at all like me. I've heard some college campuses where they don't want to have a guest speaker who is too conservative.
Charles Murray, no away!
That's the free speech of the left.
This is not an argument. This is a religion.
It features a number of local voices as well, including a review of what happened at Evergreen State College and also at the University of Washington. No Safe Spaces should be absolutely required viewing for any American. But if you have a kid that's in college or is in high school and about to go to college, you need to see this movie with them. This, yes, is an entertaining documentary, but it's more than that. This is an important documentary. What's happening in this country is frightening, especially since it's happening at the space you'd expect at least to happen at, where you wouldn't expect this kind of abuse to happen. And yet it is happening, which is why you need to watch this movie. You will get mad watching No Safe Spaces. You will become irate. You will leave, however, wanting to actually do something about the situation that's happening right now. And that's what a good documentary can do. I think No Safe Spaces navigates the issue very, very well. It packs a lot of story and examples into a relatively short period of time, which helps make this movie kind of feel more accessible than a lot of other documentaries. This is a mainstream documentary. There aren't that many movies that are especially important to watch, important for the culture, important for politics, but I think No Safe Spaces is actually one of them. This is an important documentary. And right now, luckily, it's in wide release here in Western Washington. If you are listening to my voice, there is a theater that is playing No Safe Spaces. I'm looking at the list right now at nosafespaces.com. It's playing in multiple theaters in Seattle, Linwood, Everett, Bellevue, Lakewood, Puyallup. If you are listening to my voice, you need to go see this movie this weekend. Not just because of the information it's going to give you, not just because it's going to inspire you, but because of the message that it sends to the world that what's going on is not okay. No Safe Spaces, the documentary, is getting killed online because it's a openly conservative friendly documentary, that it doesn't treat conservatives all as Nazis. And thus you've got a lot of critics out there who are completely murdering this movie. You should ignore them. This is a very good film, regardless of your personal political beliefs. Now, the full theater list, again, is available at nosafespaces.com. Go there now. Check out this movie. It is so important that you go see it this weekend. Let's make sure that the box office does really, really well for No Safe Spaces. I highly recommend you check out the movie this weekend. 1-800-465-8777 if you want to send me a text message to confirm that yes, 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 you will be seeing this movie. In fact, I'm going to see it again this weekend because I want to actually pay to see this movie so it goes to their bottom line so I can help support this film, help support Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager. NoSafeSpaces.com, the film again, No Safe Spaces. See it this weekend. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So up until this week, it's not been allowed in the United Kingdom for a man and a woman to have a civil union. The thinking is that it would undermine the traditional institution of marriage. But now you look at the demographical shifts and the demographics of who wants to couple in this way. Some of the conservatives and conservative MPs, members of parliament, they think it can actually do what they thought it wasn't, which is strengthen their end goal position of having two people coupled together as part of society. That part I don't object to whatsoever. I like this. Society is very clearly better off with couples in committed relationships, couples that look out for each other, couples who start families. That's obviously good for society. But it's the reason why some people are interested in this. Kind of have me not just objecting, but just being annoyed. And I'm not normally annoyed, am I?
Every day of your life, you're annoyed.
Okay, that, fine. But this has made me especially annoyed. So, who do you think is more interested in the mixed gender civil unions?
Young feminists.
Why are young feminists involved in this? Why do they love this? According to The Guardian, they say they believe marriage is the accumulated baggage of arcane rituals, excessive expenditure, and a history of patriarchal dominance. So they don't want to participate in the patriarchy. So they're going to go ahead and do the civil union. They are pushing civil unions as a political statement. A political statement that you're making through marriage, which feels to me like you're then dooming the civil union to failure. I don't know how many people get married simply because they want to make a political statement.
But I thought that was like the only reason.
No, not even close. They do that because they want to send a message to each other that they've got their backs. They want, of course, they get some of the benefits from a tax perspective on all of it. But they're doing it because they're in love with each other. And they want to spend the rest of their lives with each other.
That makes sense.
Right?
I agree with that.
So when all of a sudden you're getting married because, oh, you know, it'd be really cool. Let's make a political point and get married. Those marriages are not going to last. Because it's not built on the foundation of what a successful couple is supposed to be built on. Marriage or civil union should be about love. That's the bond that keeps these couples together. That's the bond that makes it so that these couplings are good for society. The benefit is the commitment. When you come together for a political statement, you'll make your political statement, then what? After that, then what? You stay together, that's an additional part of the political statement? No, not really. And all of a sudden, you think staying together in a civil marriage is somehow going to crash the patriarchy? How? I mean, let's go through this list of reasons why young people don't like marriage. Accumulated baggage of arcane rituals. Like what? What's an arcane ritual? Going into a church and going through the whole, okay, then don't do that. Just go down to the courtroom, sign the papers, and move on. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to have a priest there. You don't have to have a religious ceremony. You don't have to have a ceremony at all. You could literally go down to the courtroom, go together, bring your ID, sign a paper, and then walk out a married couple. They say excessive expenditure. Again, weddings are expensive. They are. You don't have to have an expensive wedding. You don't have to have a wedding at all. And then the history of patriarchal dominance. The patriarchal dominance, that history is driven by culture. Culture has significantly changed as it relates to the role of a man and a woman in a marriage, right? I mean, we all generally accept that. I hope so. Things have changed. Well, let's say things didn't. You think if a civil union was available in the 1950s, let's just go with that, civil unions in addition to marriage, you think all of a sudden the woman wouldn't be tasked with all of the work of taking care of the home and the kid and the man wouldn't be going to work? You think suddenly, just because she decided to call it something different, that the patriarchy still wouldn't be involved? Really? It's absolutely ludicrous to me. I love to hear from you guys on this, especially if you're married. Would you prefer not to be married, but instead be in a civil union so you get all of the benefits of marriage without it actually being called one? If you're getting all the benefits, then I don't quite understand why you think all of a sudden the patriarchy is not going to be there. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Republican State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber of Republic introduced a series of bills to show her support for law enforcement. The bills include efforts to bolster training and outreach efforts to bring in a more diverse workforce. The representative joins me now. Representative Maycumber, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So take us through this package. It has quite a number of bills.
Yes, I have four bills. They're all bipartisan support right now. I'm collecting more support before we get full numbers on them. Right now, I've spoken to officers on the ground for the last 2 years. I'm actually a former law enforcement officer. And so asking them what we can do. I mean, I understand this isn't a state legislature problem. This is a multifaceted problem, what's occurring on the streets and in our communities. And they said, don't give us money. Give us men on the ground and women and help us with our numbers. And that's been the number one thing I've heard. And then training opportunities. So the series of bills that I've put together are to make sure that we're reaching that capacity where we should be in the state of Washington. Our numbers show that we're 50th out of 50 states when we talk about population per capita for law enforcement. And that is shocking. Shocking to be a part of those numbers. So I'm doing what I can do as a state representative to make sure that you know, those men and women in blue that get up every morning, put on that uniform and protect my kids and my community, that I make sure I can do what I can do to protect them.
So how do these four bills get at those concerns?
First of all, the state of Washington has requested the legislature that we fully fund 19 academy classes, just standard. But in the budget, we only fund 9. And then we request that the CJTC come back and ask for those other 10. I mean, that's silly. We've already defined it. We've already said we want 19 fully funded. So what one of those bills does is it says, you know what? You have in statute want 19 fully funded. We're just going to fund those 19. If we need additional classes, come back and ask for them. But don't play budget gimmicks by those last 10. I mean, this is not a time to play budget gimmicks. Fund it, fully fund it, and then get it done.
Isn't part of the problem, though, because I've been covering the issues that the officers here in Washington State have been having for a while now. Part of the problem is they don't necessarily have enough bodies to fill the seats in some of the training courses, at least from a perspective of certain departments. And they've kind of moved stuff around. Seattle, for example, used to be guaranteed X amount of seats, but then they weren't filling them, so they moved them over to some other groups. How much of that is at play in some of these issues over budgets?
Well, we have those 19 classes we do have the seats for. As you see, the bell curve, and you know this, of retirement. Mm-hmm. We're having the quite a bit of retirement. And yes, recruitment is huge. I mean, it's a big issue. And that's where another bill comes in. It's the community outreach bill, understanding that there's different communities that speak different languages and look different, and having that ability to go into those communities and say, you know, you were going to make a good law enforcement officer. Come in and have that ability to come see what it's about in law enforcement. And I think that outreach is so important. I was a law enforcement officer in a multicultural district in an urban area, and I understand what it means when you do community policing and making sure your whole community wants to be a part of that law enforcement world.
Do you think your bills will address some of the concerns on the ground from like a Seattle perspective? I've been covering that obviously a lot, where you've got a lot of officers who are frankly just leaving because they don't have the support that you know that they need in order to do their job from government officials.
And it's devastating. I have been working with Compass for many years. I was actually the 2018 Compass Legislator of the Year. These men and women have done so much. And as a state legislature, I can only do so much for them. And that's a local government issue. But a lot of these bills are to assist them. You know, Seattle PD have worked very hard. Those men and women are definitely in the forefront of the battle. And to see them leaving in droves, it's hard. It's hard for the ones that are staying. And so everything that I can do in these four bills in this package, bipartisan support, maybe will alleviate some of that stress, maybe alleviate some of those problems for them. But, you know, once again, it's all on the ground, it's in the community, and it's in the local government.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Republican State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber. We're talking about her series of bills, four bills in all, meant to bolster training and outreach for officers across the state. And, you know, to your point, you mentioned Compass. By the way, folks at home, Compass is the Council of Metropolitan Police and Sheriffs. It's an awesome organization of officers and deputies who are fighting really hard for the rights of officers. Do you feel like there is enough respect for policing, not just in Washington State, but across the country? It feels like the louder the voices are who are so virulently anti-cop is part of a huge reason why so many people are reluctant to get into law enforcement.
Oh, absolutely. You know, people ask me, what is it like to have 50% of people hate you in politics? And I say, I was a cop. I had 90% of people hate me in uniform. So I'm moving up in the world. But to be in law enforcement right now is just, you know, it's a very difficult position. And, you know, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more we put down the law enforcement career, the more we make it more difficult for them to get in, the more, you know, those new hires, you know, the people that are in for the right reasons don't go into that profession.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy where you have one person on a call and a difficult call. You have, you know, no backup. You have problems with your hires. You're creating that self-fulfilling prophecy. These are people who are willing to put their lives on the line for sometimes people who don't know the value of their own life. I mean, you're willing to go into those dark places, under the bridges, into the streets, to protect every single life. And we forget that. And to vilify them to the point where nobody else wants to do the job, it's that moment when you call 911 because it's your baby,
yeah,
or your family, and you realize how important those men and women are in uniform.
The unfortunate reality, though, is some of your Democratic colleagues are engaged in exactly the kind of conduct that you and I find pretty despicable. I mean, last year they made it easier for cops to be prosecuted for use of force when officers have a split second to decide whether or not they're going to use their weapon. And you know this as a former law enforcement officer. You guys don't put on that uniform with the expectation, the eager excitement to use your weapon. You never want to do that.
No, absolutely not. And that's without that backup, you're actually thinking about, you know, your family too now with this. I mean, you could have your whole family civilly prosecuted. And to have that, looking at your kids' future, and I mean, why put on that uniform for $60,000 a year?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty shaking, you know, become a real estate agent. So yeah, lower criminal penalties. It's kind of shocking to see what we are doing to the criminal justice system and those officers that, like I said, go into places that a lot of those people have never been in.
Yeah.
A lot of those people have never been under the bridge. A lot of those people have never, you know, had to do a pat down with needles. I mean, that's an everyday thing. And people don't talk about it.
Well, it sounds like you've got some bipartisan support right now. You could always use more. So anyone at home who wants to get involved, please, please, please call your state representative. Make sure they know that you're counting on them to back Representative Maycumber's bills on law enforcement. Call the hotline at 1-800-562-6000, and they'll connect you directly with whomever it is that represents you in Olympia. That number, again, is 1-800-562-6000. Before we let you go, I want to ask a question unrelated to this. It's specifically about 976. Your colleagues, both in the House and in the Senate, are calling for a special session to deal with 976. Where do you stand on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have always stood by the people and their votes. And I think it's important that as a state legislature, you can continue to stand by what the people want. And so to have that special session and look at that 7% that the I-976 and that budget will affect, and once again, I believe it's 70% or 7%, we'll correct that, 7% of the transportation budget, we can talk about, you know, how to move things around and how to make it work, and there's no reason it can't.
State Representative Maycumber of Republic, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The Seahawks have the opportunity to clinch a playoff berth, but first they have to go up against the LA Rams. Joining me on the line to discuss is our good friend Bob Stelton from 710 ESPN Seattle. Hello.
What's going on, man?
So Rams games with the Seahawks are always kind of interesting. The Rams are a good team. They've kind of plateaued of late, but when they go against the Seahawks, it always seems to be a nail biter.
Yeah, it's been the history. I mean, even when the Rams have been bad, they've given the Seahawks problems. They've beaten the Seahawks when they've been bad. So a little different. It's a different regime. You got a different quarterback. You got, you know, this is a team that's obviously a Super Bowl representative last year, but they are a shadow of the team that they were last year for a lot of different reasons.
Though I believe Jared Goff, the quarterback for Rams, wasn't he just named NFC Offensive Player of the Week?
Yeah, well, he went up against the worst defense in the NFL and had a really big game. You look at what he's done prior to that. I mean, on the season, he's got 13 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and completing just over 60% of his passes. That's not good. Todd Gurley has yet to have a 100-yard game. He's the guy that they committed a truckload of money to, who was their absolute workhorse, and he's got a degenerative condition in his knee that really impacted him late in the season last year, and I would say what you've seen of him this year is a very different version of him. They've used him a lot, much more sparingly, a little bit more in recent weeks, but he's far from the electric, dominating player that he's been in the past. He's capable of doing that. He's just not, he doesn't look to be capable of doing it every week, so it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back this week because they used him quite a bit last week.
So, what do the Seahawks need to do in order to just, you know, elevate their chances of just making this playoff position?
If they can get pressure on Jared Goff, and I know it's always the same, get pressure on the quarterback. Well, Jared Goff is one of the worst quarterbacks under pressure in the league. If you look at some of the advanced metrics, and if you just use the eye test, he's just a quarterback that doesn't do well. There are certain quarterbacks, even Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning used to do it, where they love pressure. They love the blitz because they would pick you apart. They would just wait for it. Whereas Jared Goff is a guy, when there's pressure, he tends to panic. He tends to make some bad decisions, some really poor throws. So if you can get him in a position, it doesn't even have to result in a sack. Get him to move his feet. Get him to feel like that pocket is collapsing. You can force him into some really ugly throws and ugly decisions.
Well, normally then we would pay close attention to Jadeveon Clowney, right? I mean, he's been insane in disrupting the flow of play. He had limited training this week for a second day. Obviously, it plays a little bit into he had an issue health-wise a couple weeks ago, and they did just have a Monday night football game. But where do you expect him to be?
Well, as far as what you said about limited practice time, that it'll be like that the rest of the season. He's got a sports hernia that's probably going to require surgery. And by managing it, they're going to limit what he does in practice and have him ready for game time. But you saw other guys step up in his absence. Rasheem Green, all of a sudden, is a guy we've called his name the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin Jefferson is a guy that's really having a solid year. So you've got guys who are they're kind of doing it by committee. There's not one guy that's stepped up in his absence or when he was out that week. Ziggy Ansah has come on. He's dealing with a bit of a neck injury right now, so we'll see. But the good news is you're not relying on one guy. It's great if everybody's healthy, and if Clowney's healthy, he's a monster. But you've seen other guys just chip in here and there, not one guy dominating, but you'll hear Green's name. You hear Quentin Jefferson's name. You hear Ansah's name. You hear Puna Ford and Al Wood. So they're doing a great job of sort of picking up the slack by committee.
Well, then offensively, it would appear that Jacob Hollister is back, yes?
Yeah, he's fine. He's, nobody is 100% at this time of year, so you sort of take the injury reports with a grain of salt when you see this guy was limited or, this guy had a day off or whatever. That's, you got four games. You played 12 games. Everybody's dealing with some sort of nagging injury, and, this is how they're going to preserve them. This is how they're going to manage those injuries.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Bob Stelton from 710 ESPN Seattle. We're talking about this weekend's Seahawks game as they take on the LA Rams, a team that's always been a little bit of a pain in the backside for the Seahawks. So what do the Seahawks need to do? What are your keys to the match? Or excuse me, keys to the game?
Yeah, we're talking real football, not that soccer thing you like to talk about. They've got to do what I talked about a moment ago, is get pressure on Goff. If they can do that, and they got to force Goff to be the one to try to beat him. Shut Gurley down early. Really do what you can to limit his impact, limit his effectiveness. Put it on Goff's shoulders. And again, it'd be great if you can sack him. If you don't, as long as you're getting pressure, it's going to be almost as effective. Offensively, hang on to the ball. I think defensively, the Rams have got some holes in their secondary. They just have not played up to the level that you would think with some of the big names they have on that team. So I think if you can give Russell time, and that's going to be tough when you've got somebody like Aaron Donald and you've got Dante Fowler Jr. and you've got Michael Brockers. You've got a lot of talent that hasn't really gelled on that side, but they're capable. You give Russell time, you hang on to the ball. I know it sounds basic, but it's been a problem, as we've seen in recent games. Hang on to the ball, get pressure on Goff. They should walk away with this one.
So what are the playoff implications of a win this weekend?
Well, it secures their spot in the postseason. It doesn't secure their position. They're still in a battle with the 49ers for the top seed. Right now, the Seahawks are ahead of the 49ers. Record-wise, they're tied, but they beat the 49ers, so they hold that tiebreaker advantage. So they've got to keep winning. You keep winning. Maybe the 49ers drop their game to the Saints this weekend. We'll see. But your final game of the season is against the San Francisco 49ers at CenturyLink Field. So they need to keep handling their business. They need to keep winning keep that lead in the division. Otherwise, they end up as a wild card. They could be a wild card with them being a team, which means they're on the road to start the playoffs against probably Dallas or Philadelphia, whoever wins.
Yeah, which is not the most ideal position for the Seahawks to be. Your phone is breaking up, which is okay, because we're at the end of the show. We've been talking with Bob Stone. Just real quickly, what's your prediction?
I like the Seahawks to win. I don't think they're going to blow them out. The Seahawks don't blow anybody out. So I'm gonna call it a single-digit win. I'd say somewhere 24-17.
24-17. I'm going to say
3-1. 3-1. That one is going to be tough to score, but if they do, I will give you all the credit in the world because it's never happened.
Look, I'm very confident if that does happen. I expect to have my own sports talk show over on your side of the building, 710 ESPN Seattle. Bob Stone, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
You got it, man.
You've been listening to the Jason Rancho. Hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.